Hello, I'm Jeff Stelling, and this is Football's Greatest. Each week, I'll be sitting down with a legend to discuss and debate some of the best exponents of the beautiful game. Now, in this episode, I've been joined by an all-time Tottenham great who is going to pick his five favourite Spurs players of all time, Glenn Hoddle.
It was quite incredible. It was in this 13-a-side. There was so many players in this tight gym. And within 10 minutes of watching him, he'd scored about seven goals. I remember Ozzy sometimes saying, Stevie, why are you keep shouting? Don't shout. And he went, well, you're a World Cup winner. He said, you might not need some, but players need to talk. He's just got this calmness about him. You know, he's unflustered, really. He just knows what he's good at, knows left foot, right foot, headers, all-round striker.
Glenn Hoddle, thanks for joining me.
Well, it's a pleasure. Yeah, great to be here, Jeff.
Just before we get into the five you picked, I just want to tell people about those you haven't.
Oh, I know.
There's no Ledley King, no Gascoigne, no Ginola, no Bale, no Lineker, no Blanchflower, no Modric, no Klinsmann, no Sheringham, no Mullery, no Waddle, no dear. Son, no Pat Jennings. Do you want to have a rethink?
I know. You know what? When I was asked to do it, I'm thinking, I can't leave him out. And then I did it. And then I thought, well, I can't leave him out. So I've got to put him in. And there's just a list. That was one thing. Spurs may not have won as many trophies as we would love to have done over the years. But my word, there's been individuals, you know, that's a club that knows how to produce or buy, however, special players. And the list you've just, I don't think you mentioned Dave McKay even then.
No.
In that, you know. It was so hard to do. And, you know, some I've played with and some I watched as a kid when I was an apprentice at Tottenham. But it was an impossible question and I've had an impossible answer because you're right. I kept thinking about the ones I've left out. Your Sheringhams and your, well, it's Gazza. And the only reason I left Gazza out was the length of time that he was at Tottenham and probably Chrissy as well. Wads was a fabulous player. Love playing with him. Oh, it was so hard. Anyway, let's get to the five that I've picked.
Let's talk about the five that you put in. Who's the first of them then?
Well, I'm not going to put them in any sort of order. I can't remember them now. What I put down, actually. But let's go with the greatest goal scorer I think the country's ever, Jimmy Greaves. You know, as a kid watching him play. And I saw him come back for his testimonial, you know. They gave him a testimonial and he'd finished playing, I think, at West Ham. And he'd been out about, I can't remember how many, a year. So he came back to train and I was an apprentice. And I was watching him in the gym upstairs in the gallery. And it was quite incredible. It was in this 13-a-side. It was so many players in this tight gym. And within 10 minutes of watching him, he'd scored about seven goals. And he was forever looking over his shoulder. He was never looking at the ball. And he was always looking over his shoulder, where the goal was, where his opponents were. And my word, within two touches, bang, it was in the back of the net. And it was like, wow. And then watching him play and the thing, it just unbelievable goal scorer. An unbelievable glider on the pitch, on terrible pitches. Even worse, perhaps, than when I played. They were even worse then, back then, when Jimmy was playing. And he glided and he went across the top of the surface so quick, where a lot of players go through the surface. He was on the top of it. And he looked like he was just a cut above anything else in and around that penalty area.
Did you take something from him then with that, you know, awareness that he had, that vision?
I did, actually, yeah. I remember thinking about him and looking over his shoulder, and as a midfield player, you're right in the hub of it. You're playing with 360 degrees, as I like to say, and you've got to have that vision. So you've got to be aware of everyone that you can't see on your blind side. So, taking that and seeing that, you think, wow, I can use that. So that was at a very, 15 when I was watching him then. And so that was a real eye-opener for me. But Jimmy was a class player. And what a record of goal scorers.
Yeah.
Incredible.
He wasn't big and physical, but he was always one step ahead, wasn't he?
Yeah. And he's, you know, he just had that instinct that all great goal scorers have got, actually. That instinct that you can't coach. It's just, he'd score individual goals as well, don't get me wrong. You know, some beautiful goals I remember him scoring from the halfway line. But he just knew where the ball was going to drop. He knew where mistakes were going to happen. Oh, he had that instinct, yeah. So Jimmy would be definitely in most people's top five, I think. Yeah,
I know, you know,
watching Barcelona when Messi was in his prime, I used to almost not watch the game because I'd just be watching Messi, who would be 30 yards from the ball, but his head would be on a swivel, just looking at where everybody was. So when
assessing things,
his awareness was brilliant.
Yeah, that's where, you know, that you're ahead of the game. It's like it's like a game of chess.
I hope you're enjoying the show. We can't do it without you. If you're listening to us on your favourite podcast platform, please press follow to make sure we're in your feed every week. Okay, so one striker there. You've included two more strikers in your top five, Glenn.
Yeah, I certainly have. You know what? Let's go with Martin. Martin Chivers was a fantastic centre forward. Not because he saw me as a kid and he recommended me and backed up what the scouts had already said for me to get to Tottenham.
But that's a help, mind you, isn't it?
Well, it was a big help at the time, yeah, I've got to say.
The spinny dynamos.
Spinny dynamos in a cup final, yeah. So not because of that reason, Martin, but you've got to look at the history of Tottenham and you've got to see when successful teams were built and whatever. And Chiv was a massive, massive part of that. I remember going with my dad to the League Cup final at Wembley, Aston Villa, and Martin scoring the two goals. Won a trophy for a while, and it was, you know, so that had an impact on me as a fan going there as a youngster. And then the two goals he scored in the UEFA Cup final. Massive for the history of the club, you know. Two wonderful goals, but Martin was just such a skillful player for such a big frame. He was a target man. Back in the day, you know, they'd go from back to front. And him and Alan Gilzean, you know, were the two strikers that had this little telepathic sort of understanding, really. But Martin, I remember playing with Martin, although he must have felt a bit old, really, because I made my full debut and he was in the game, in the team. But I played with him in the reserves. I remember saying to my dad, I said, oh, it was wonderful, because I'd make a run. You know, ball would be going into the striker and at certain centre forwards, you think, well, I'll make the run, but I weren't sure whether it was coming. So when it doesn't come, you think, oh, shall I make that run again? Because I'm out of the game if I make that run. You make a run with Martin in the reserves. I was only 16. I'd make a run, and whether it was off his head, off his chest, off his thigh, off his foot, the ball would just land at my foot. And then I'd be had the momentum to go, and, you know, you give a dummy for your defender who's marking you in midfield, make a run, boom, and it was there. It was like delivery, you know, deliveroo. It was beautiful. And I said, Dad, every time I made a run, the ball was there. It was just lovely to play in. So having played with Martin at that level as a youngster and then play with him in the first team later on, you know, I was only 12 when he saw me in that final for Spinny Dynamos. It must have been a strange feeling for him, actually. There's him picking out a little 12-year-old and end up playing with him, which was fascinating. It was fantastic. But he was such an influence on that team in the 70s. And a lovely, smashing guy. But big goals in big moments, Martin.
I looked at his international record as well, you know, Glenn, because he scored 13 in 24 internationals, so better than one in two. Yep. Yet after England went out of the World Cup in the Poland game in 1973, he never played for them again, even though he was only 28.
Yeah. That was
sounds like he's been made a scapegoat.
Yeah, it looks that way, doesn't it? And as you say, 28, you're in your prime.
Yeah.
Very underrated player. I mean, a lot of people might say, well, you're top five, Glenn. You've left out so-and-so. But I'm going from somebody that knows the club inside out, from a fan to apprentice, playing with him. And so I'm going from those eyes. And the effect he had on the club's history, really, of winning trophies in big games. Martin certainly didn't let you down. He was the top man, and for those sort of four seasons, he was absolutely fantastic. I remember the long throw as well. He had this long throw. It was a shame he weren't in the middle as well to flick it on. But he had this long throw. Chivers. I remember being behind the goal at the Park Lane singing his name. So it was brilliant.
Well, you've got one more striker. Shall we go with him next before the midfield players?
Well, it's the modern day. I mean, obviously, he's moved on to Germany, but Harry Kane has been sensational since he's come into the first team, really, at Tottenham. The goals that he scored, the way he's played and added to his dimension to his game before he's gone to Germany. Probably doesn't need that as much, playing for Munich. But wonderful. Finisher, you know, and he's just got this calmness about him. You know, he's unflustered, really, just knows what he's good at, knows left foot, right foot, headers, all-round striker. that as a modern day centre forward that's going out of the game. Actually, a lot of teams are not playing with that type of player, but he's so good that he would have walked into Man City if they'd could have got him. So a wonderful player that's come through the ranks, come through a different way, actually. You know, he was sent out on loan to Yeovil and places like Millwall and different places.
Wow, I've got his record here, yeah. You know, 5-18 for Leighton Orient, 9-27 for Millwall, 9-5 for Norwich, 2-15 for Leicester. And Tim Sherwood said when he was manager at Spurs that the club wanted to get rid of him.
Well, that gives you heart, doesn't it? Any youngster out there that's not finding it easy, let's put it that way, at the time, then Harry Kane, look at Harry Kane's situation.
Great example, isn't he?
Great example. You have to have the talent in the end. And suddenly something obviously clicked. Somebody's given him a chance. I think it was under Harry, Harry Redknapp.
I think Tim did. I think Sherwood was the first one.
Was it in Europa, wasn't it? There was a game that played and suddenly scored. And that confidence is a massive thing, especially with a young player. And if you haven't got that confidence, then you need something to trigger it, whether it's a manager or whether it's a goal, simply the thing as a goal at a top level in the first team. But you've got to have the talent, and he's proved that that you can make it in a different way, totally different way. And credit to him. And, you know, he's probably the first one to admit, back then, he'd have probably, if someone said to him, you know, by the year 2023, you're going to be the best striker in the world, son. He'd look at them and go, are you sure? No way, you know, but that's football, that's life. And he deserves it because he's been absolutely brilliant.
He has, and
what a great ambassador for the game.
Yeah.
Not only for Tottenham and for England, but for himself and his family. Fantastic ambassador, great example for kids. There's nothing you can really say that's negative with Harry, really.
And as a great passer of the ball yourself, do you enjoy those moments when he drops deeper and then sprays the ball around as if he could have been a midfield player, a la Glenn Hoddle?
Well, I felt sorry for him to a certain degree because his back end of his career before he went, obviously, he had to play 9 and 10. He had to play a 9 row and a 10. Should have had a half cut number on his shirt because he was dropping in there and he was making some fantastic passes and whatever. But I think it was Spurs needed him to do that. At Munich, he doesn't need to do that. If he'd have gone to Man City, he wouldn't have needed to do that. But because it's horses for courses football, he's gone, you know what, I can offer a bit more if for the team need me to do that. But what he did do is he arrived in the box still. He didn't take away his goal scoring prowess. So credit to him, he's added to his game. And he can do that if he wants to do it. I don't think he'll need to do it. He might need to do it more, maybe a little bit with England. Maybe not. Maybe now England are in, we've got enough offensive players that he might not need to do that so much. But he certainly did at Tottenham, and he did it because of what the team needed. Might have sacrificed a little bit, but I think he enjoys coming, dropping in there and making them passes. And credit to him, he's added to his bow. He's added to himself as a player, which is fantastic.
So no surprise about how well he's done in Munich.
No, my word, he's just hit the road running, isn't he? He's just like, it's like he's had 5 seasons there. Maybe he finds that league a little bit easy, you know. It is the toughest league, the Premier League, and he's done it here. So, you know, that league isn't as quite the same as it is when you're playing the bottom teams in the Premier League. You know it's on every game. Perhaps with Bayern Munich, they're so powerful, there's 5 or 6, 7, 8 games where they're top games. The rest, I think, he's, you know, and that's not Harry's fault, but he's hit the road running there. He's done brilliant.
You may have heard that NordVPN is an essential cybersecurity tool which protects all your personal data whilst online. But did you know it could save you money? With NordVPN, you can take advantage of cheaper pricing in other countries by switching your location with one click. For example, if you're going on holiday, you can book flights, hotels, and rental cars via another region and take advantage of the cheaper prices in that region. NordVPN is the same price as a cup of coffee a month, but with these savings, NordVPN essentially pays for itself. To grab our huge discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/fgpod. This code will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the episode description box. Okay, a couple of midfielders then that you've chosen, Glenn.
Yeah, Ozzy was so unique and had a massive influence with the team, with myself, that we gelled straight away once we got in each other's company and started playing football together, training together. And he was a unique player in many ways, in the sense that he covered the ground over 5 or 6 yards so quickly. So quickly, and used to run at people, big players trying to kick him and he'd hold players off, and quite unique actually in many ways. He wasn't a purveyor of the ball. He wouldn't hit sort of, every now and again he would, but he wasn't like one of these players that would hit a pass that would take a team out in one pass. He didn't hit many players, but he used to run at people and attack them and go by them and lend you the ball. I always say, you know, he'd lend you it because he wanted it back. But wonderful player, unique player, different player. And I tell you what Ozzy did as well. He read the game. It was like a game. He was good at chess, actually. It was like a chess game to Ozzy. He would be one or two moves, particularly when the opponents had the ball. He actually had this unique sort of, he could sniff out when someone was going to lose the ball and get in position. And then he'd go and nick the ball sometimes. And when you'd come from nowhere and pinch the ball and we'd be off on the attack. And I'm thinking, well, we're just defending. Now we're on the attack. He was a very unique player, was he? And you know what, with Ricky as well coming, not only were they World Cup winners, they were fabulous players. They were very humble guys, both of them, really good guys, had a great sense of humour. To be in Ozzy's company as a player, and now, I still see him now, we play golf. He's a wonderful guy. He really is. Both of them, so humble. They could have come over as big time Charlies, we've won the World Cup. Not a bit. And, you know, 40 odd years later, he's still living in this country. Still can't talk English, but, you know, that's another thing.
but that was one of the things, wasn't it? He's come from Argentina.
Yeah.
A time when there wasn't a big foreign influx into this country. He doesn't speak the language at all. And yet here you are, a couple of years later, you know, Tottenham are making a song about him, Ozzy's dream.
Ozzy's
you know?
Dream. Yeah.
You couldn't write that,
Ozzy's
could you?
Going to Wembley, yeah. And that was a bit when, I've never seen him so nervous when we had to do the bit, when he has to say his individual bit in the cup for Tottenham. He was so nervous and he couldn't do it. And we're giving him stick, you imagine, in the studio. And yeah. It's the only time I've really seen him have a panic up.
I think what people also forget now is that at the time when Ozzy and Ricky Veer were in this country, that was the time when the UK went to war with Argentina, which was an incredibly difficult time for them, wasn't it? Because I think that Ozzy, people knew he loved life in Tottenham. So in this country, in certain places, he was regarded, you know, as the enemy. But back home in Argentina, he was also regarded as the enemy because of his love for this country.
Absolutely. It was a tough time for him and Ricky. And we did as much as we can as teammates to help him, and the club did, I know that, and Keith Birkinshaw. But it was, we knew it was inside, it was churning, you know. And I think in the end he went, if I believe, he went away for a loan period.
Yeah, somewhere. I think he went to PSG,
didn't he?
And came back.
Yeah, and it was a tough time for him. But we knew that he had the personality and the character to deal with it, but it was different. It wasn't football related. This was totally different. You know, no one can be taught how to deal with those things, but Ozzy was experienced enough and dealt with it all. And he always had that sense of humour. Ozzy, he's such a funny man. He has me in stitches still now. And he had that. Both of them had that. But I said, the one thing he had was not only his ability and his World Cup winner, he just had this humility about him, and he still has now.
Tottenham fans absolutely loved him. They produced a banner, didn't they, one day, which said, Argentina can keep the Falklands, we'll keep Ozzy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it was like. We were like, back then it was a bit more like a family. It really was. You protect your family, don't you? And that's what we tried as well as we could do. But he come through it with flying colours, like he comes through everything.
Yeah.
Like, well, apart from when I play golf with him, obviously.
You always beat him.
Well, he's a bandit. Let's put it that way. He's off a bandit handicap. He won a trophy the other week, well, a few years, a variety club, was it? And in his team, they won. And his speech was, well, obviously, he said, you didn't cheat as well as we all cheated. That was his speech after he won the golf.
Brilliant. I can honestly tell you, I've never, ever heard anyone have a bad word to say about Ozzy Arfield.
No, he's a great man. Lovely man.
Your other choice, your one remaining choice, I've never heard anybody have a bad word to say about him either.
I can't remember when I put my name in.
Steve Perryman.
Oh, of course, Skip. I call him a Skip, see? Well, yeah, yeah. Stevie, oh my word. I couldn't do a top five without Steve. More games than anyone at the club, you know. And one thing, when I was an apprentice, a schoolboy and apprentice coming through, I mean, it was hard. It was a hard school, that first team. When I was an apprentice, I think about Joe Cunn here, and there was some hard characters.
Some tough guys there.
Oh, dear. Yeah. And Steve was the one that I looked at. He was 18, 19-year-old. He was the younger one. But the way he held himself, the way he didn't give a stick. He helped us, you know. And I thought, yeah, you're a class act. This is good. And then eventually getting in the first team and then him being the skipper. He's the best skipper I've played under in the sense that he had everything, because good skippers are not ones that are going to show the world everything. It was the little things that he would say. He could be fierce. If you thought you were out of order or you're wrong, he'd be fierce with you. But then he'd encourage you the next moment. He was spot on. He was an extension of the manager on the pitch. And he would talk to players and he'd spend time. And he spent time with me as a youngster. And I remember him saying to me, pulling me, I was 17, 18, just got in the first team. And he went, Glenn, he said, the coaches will try and do this. He said, make sure you listen. Give them respect to listen, he said. But take in what you want to take in, that you think's right for you, because you're a unique player. He said, but let the other stuff go. And I think he was talking from his own experience in many ways. And that was great advice for me. And then on the pitch, he was wonderful to play with, because he was a talker. He could talk, he read the game. And I remember Ozzy sometimes saying, Stevie, why you keep shouting? Don't shout. And he went, well, you're a World Cup winner. He said, you might not need some, but players need to be, we need to talk. If we talk, we make a 12th man. The language of football language, we make a 12th man on the pitch. If everyone talks and gives information, and Ozzy and him will go, ah, Ozzy go, no, go for one. But Steve was a great talker. I learned something with Steve, which I brought into coaching, put information on your pass. So Stevie would pass the ball into you, and he would only offer, because he'd be seeing that, he'd say, Tony Galvin's on, and he'd be on the other side of the pitch. But it was great information, because he knew I could actually manipulate the ball and ping it out there and have the confidence to do it. And he had this, he would talk to all the players like that, and off the pitch, on the pitch, whatever. Great captain and a good player. Well, I watched him as an apprentice in the centre and midfield, and he would get his foot in, he'd tackle, he was everywhere. And then he went back later on and played at the back, played at a sweeper. And then he played right back most of the time in the 80s when we had it going there as a team. And terrific player, great player.
I do hope you're enjoying the show. I just want to tell you that you can follow us at Football's Greatest Pod on Instagram, TikTok and Facebook. And search for Football's Greatest Pod to find us on X. I was interested to see he only won one full England cap.
Yeah.
Was he a bit unlucky?
He was. Yeah, I think he was unlucky at the time. There was a few. Because at that time, I think it was right back where he was. He might have, in a different era, he might have got in the midfield or even at the back, actually. But we weren't going to do that in England at that time. It was about big centre-backs. And so he wasn't going to get. But right back, we had some decent right back. So I think it was a tough one. People didn't realise how good he was until you played with him or you saw him week in and week out, which sometimes doesn't happen with England managers. Obviously, you can't be everywhere. And the scouting wasn't quite the same. So great player for me. Great use of the ball and tigerish. But a great example for me as a young player coming in, you know. And I still, if I see him now, I still call him Skip. And that's the respect I've got for him, you know, and all the players have, yeah.
Yeah, it's ironic, isn't it, sitting here talking, Glenn, because I think Steve had a heart issue as well, didn't he?
He did.
An aortic issue, and his life had to be saved as well. So you boys have got a few things in common, to say the
Absolutely.
Least.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't know what it is about Tottenham. Ozzy's had a heart problem as well. And there's quite a few at Tottenham. It might be the club.
Yeah. No. But people have always said Tottenham got no heart, you know. So, I mean, this is clearly
sure
a case that they have.
Yeah.
Only Tottenham critics.
Yeah, of course, yeah. But no, Stevie was the skip and so influential in that 80s when we had a good side. And obviously, he had success in the League Cup in the 70s and the UEFA Cup then. So, you know, he was the only one really in an era that had won trophies. Obviously, Ozzy and Ricky had won, but that team, we hadn't won anything. till 81. So it was having that influence, having that experience around us that was extra special. Mm.
Is it just a final point on captaincy, because you're saying what a great leader he was. Oh. Is it different, you know, being captain at your club, you know, you're surrounded by the same players week in and week out, than it is at international level?
Totally different. Totally different. I'll give you the example. I wouldn't, if I was a club manager, I wouldn't have made Alan Shearer my captain, although he's a good leader anyway, and I think he had the right contribute. The talents to be a captain, and that's why I made him captain at England level. But you do it for different reasons, because he had the leadership within himself as a player, but it's the respect that referees and the opponents have and world football has for that type of player. At a club level, you'd have a Stevie Perriman, or you maybe have a Paul Ince or a Tony Adams, or a, you know, day to day. Club level is completely different, like it is managing the England team or managing a club or playing for your club or playing for... It's totally two different scenarios. For me, captaincy was always judged, and Steve would have this, as games where he would be playing not so well. He'd be the first to admit he's having a bit of a bad game, but he wouldn't be any different. And his captaincy levels, he would not be any different. He'd be digging out people. You know, he'd be saying, this is what the team's needed. It was always the team first. And he would come out in meetings and say that. And you could easily say, well, Steve, you didn't have the best game yourself. But you realise that that's where it shows real captaincy. When you're not playing so well, but you're still doing the things that, if you were playing well, that you'd say. So you dig people out, you give them encouragement, you do this, you do that, you might... And that's what Steve was like. And that's where I thought, wow, that's what real captaincy is about, you know. And it's not about shouting and screaming at people. And if that needs to be done, he'd have done it. But it's not about that. That's for show. Some of the best captains is just that little one word that you just get in your ear and you go, oh, okay, yeah. And that's great captaincy. And Steve had that.
Brilliant. Glenn, thanks for coming in and telling us your top five Spurs players. We're going
to
ask...
I apologise to all the ones that I...
No, we'll ask you to come back and we'll give you a top 20 next time.
Top
Is 20. That okay?
I'll come back.
You'll still struggle.
20. I'll still struggle, yeah. I can't believe it. Yeah, I mean, there's so many players that, oh my word. When it was asked, I said, I can't do five. But it is what it is, you know. Not everyone's going to agree with that. Of course not. But there's reasons, hopefully, behind playing with them and try and give you a little bit of into why I've gone with those five, actually. Yeah. There's reasons behind it, but... Wonderful. There's some wonderful players that I haven't picked, yeah. Without a doubt, you know.
Thanks, Glenn. I've just got Chris Waddle on the phone. He wants to have a word with you. Thanks for joining us,
He's
Glenn.
The best singer I've ever sung with.
You said he was the second best. You were the best.
Well, yeah. Yeah, second best then.
Glenn, thanks so much for joining us. A tough decision. Don't forget to listen to our chat on greatest midfielders as well. Next time on Football's Greatest, Gordon Strachan tells us about some of the best managers that he's worked with.
He also had another tape, so Alex, which he used to play in the bus, called Glenn Daly singing, but we got rid of that as a team. He still doesn't know to this day who chucked it out the window. This Glenn Daly live at some social club, somebody chucked it out the window. He was a small guy.
He's sitting quite close to me.
Yeah, I recognise him over there. Yeah.
Now, if you're watching on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button so you don't miss an episode of Football's Greatest. And if you're listening to us on your favourite podcast platform, please press follow so you get us in your feed every week. This has been Football's Greatest, and it is a Folding Pocket production with BBC Studios.